Hiya, welcome to the Toncast. I'm Johnny Solomon, your host today, and I'm with a very special friend of us, Todd Robert Anderson.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing today?
Oh, I feel like $100.
It's another Tuesday, right?
It is. It's just another Tuesday.
So, on, do you have any Tuesday memories, really specific Tuesday memories from years gone by?
Memories of Tuesdays?
Yeah, things that happen on a Tuesday for you.
I think when I was a kid, I probably had a birthday on a Tuesday.
Oh, really?
That was probably just disappointing because I had to go to school. But then I would get cake, but it wasn't a whole day.
So were you...
Like, now that I'm middle-aged, I'll celebrate my birthday for a week.
That's
not
smart.
Just Tuesday. It's That's a full smart. Week.
Were you... I mean, did you have a lot of expectations as a child that weren't met?
Yeah, most of my childhood was expectations not getting met. And that has gone right into adulthood, I think. It's most of... You know, I'm a very entitled, self-entitled person. I do think the world owes me things. I don't get a lot of it. So that is definitely a personality trait of mine. I think it's reasonable.
It is reasonable.
But, yeah, it can be frustrating. I feel like I should have gotten a lot more money at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the world owes me, like, cash.
And your
bags of
cash flow is not flowing.
Bags of cash. Well, it flows.
Flows, but not in your direction.
It flows poorly. It's like a. I mean, it flows, but it's like a. It's not like a river.
It's not a river.
It's a creek.
Yeah.
A backyard creek.
Slight drips.
Drips.
Yeah.
And you put a little nice, like, footbridge over it to go, you know, so you can get to the path through the woods behind your house. But it's walking over that bridge can be depressing because sometimes the creek is just about dry.
Yeah.
But then after a good rain, you know, it's mm-hmm. nice again. Bubbling
so,
brook.
All right. Now, I hear what you're saying about this. And one of the things that I think about from it is it's important to embrace yourself,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, sure.
And it sounds to me...
You're talking about masturbation?
Well... That would be one form, yeah.
Self-care. It's self-care.
Yeah, I mean, that's honoring yourself, truly.
Yeah.
You know, exercising well, tenacity, showing your sword.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you were talking about a metaphorical embracement,
yeah,
not
I
so
think,
literal.
I think I was.
Okay.
And I like when you read my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes me feel better.
I am a mind reader. For sure.
Yeah.
It's really easy to read men's minds that they want to just jerk off instead of doing things. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you want most of the time.
Well, I think, yeah, that release is very freeing.
Yeah. But, I mean, also, yeah, sure, yeah. But, I mean, the main reason you do anything is sex, right, ultimately?
I think it's a big force behind a lot of stuff.
I mean, you fool yourself into saying, well, I'm doing all these things, you know, once you have a family and stuff, you do all these things for your family and you do all these things, you know, for your kids or whatever. But the truth is it all started because you wanted to get laid. And really, that's the whole thing, is you want to keep getting laid. Because if you're not doing these things, then your wife is not going to be, or husband or whatever, is not going to be.
It won't be flowing.
It won't be flowing.
Yeah. It's true. It's very true.
Yeah. It's a great motivator.
It is. It is. Even beyond the cash flow.
Yeah, it's beyond the cash
flow.
But the cash flow, I mean, modern society, a cash flow equates, you know, sex in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's probably very true.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me feel a little sad, actually, when you explain this.
Sorry, I didn't mean to come on your show and make you sad.
Yeah, it has me thinking about a lot of different stuff now. Let's jump into politics.
Oh, politics. All right.
Because that's another place where this completely comes into place, I think.
That's true.
So the clusterfuck that occurred over the last few weeks.
The government shutdown, they called it?
Yeah. What do you feel about that?
I personally find the whole thing terrifying. And, you know, really the people who got screwed out of their salary weren't the people who shut the government down. It was the little guy, which is classic. But it just really bothered me that there's an entire political party run by an incredible minority of their own party that would do such a thing because they're not getting their way. It's certainly unsportsmanlike, I think. And it's just terrifying to me that that is something that can happen and can happen for a longer period of time and for worse reasons, I guess. But also, there are reasons this whole thing about healthcare, which everyone calls Obamacare, but it's like an act, it's a law.
The Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. So the fact that aggravates anybody, you know, is upsetting to me. I mean, there's something about the Republican Party, modern Republican Party, because obviously it hasn't always been that way, that I do find intensely aggravating. This BS rhetoric about, you know, being true to our forefathers and the Constitution and all that I don't buy it. It's like I talk to libertarians sometimes and, you know, they kind of frustrate me because I'm like, well, you know, if you really believe that government should be, you know, that small and uninvolved, then why don't you move to the middle of nowhere and start a commune? Why are you still on the grid? Because that's, you know, something you can do go out to the middle of nowhere. The government probably won't bother you there. And just start your own crops and shut up. But the idea that there are people who get upset about the idea of making healthcare affordable to people. And I don't even really think the Healthcare Act, the Affordable Healthcare Act, is that great a thing. It's not a single payer system, which to me is the place to go. This is just a way of making corporate entities somewhat more affordable to people who struggle more. And there should just be healthcare. Yeah. How about that? And the concept that, you know, this is a compromised bill. It's compromised. It's a compromised law. It's, we know you are terrified of losing these health care corporations, so we want to maintain that and not lose all those jobs. So we're just taking the system that's in place and adjusting it on a certain level, so it's a little less ludicrous.
Right, it's like a patch job.
It's not fixing, and it won't fix healthcare. So the fact that the Republicans are just like, no, we want the corporations to keep screwing everybody constantly out of money and healthcare is irksome. It's really bothersome, and the people that that kind of bullshit protects is such a small amount of people. That's what drives me nuts. It's the people, the CEOs of the corporations are the ones who are going to apparently feel some sort of pull when, you know, they have to charge less money. But their lifestyles aren't going to change. If you make $400 million a year and you make $100 million less, $200 totally million dollars less, it doesn't matter. Your lifestyle's going to stay the same. There's nothing to worry about. And the fact that there's a whole party of people who believe that this is the way to go because one day they too will be in the same position as the top 2%, with this $400 million income, they're nuts. The math, it just doesn't work out.
I know.
And why you wouldn't, even if that is what you want, like, which is essentially pure unadulterated greed, why is it such a big deal to help people out? You know, if you are paying taxes into this and you feel it new, at least you know it's going to something good, because they want to blow stuff up, so well, they're willing to pay that money. I don't know.
I go through the same like thing that you're talking about. It's just how it almost baffles your mind. You don't even understand how someone could think that way when you think such a different way. And you know, recently there's actually been some brain research that's come out that shows there's a completely different kind of brain, like the Republican brain mm-hmm. and the Democrat brain. The brain research has shown that it's made up. It's completely different. It's like that the Republican brain, it's very fear-based,
mm-hmm.
and there's stronger sensors in the fear area, and so things come out of reaction.
Is that something you're born with or something that's developed through
that's a good question.
A faith-based
lifestyle?
I don't
know. It could be one of those nature-nurture things. But, you know, if you Google it and read, it just came out recently. They actually have this, like, scientific proof that the brains are different. Because I know, like, sometimes when I have this kind of conversation with people, it makes me scratch my head because I can't understand how someone can even think that way.
Right.
And it also makes it kind of relates to there are people I know too who are sort of not tapped into sort of their subconscious at all, or the way they act like seems like they don't have.
They
any.
Don't go there. Yeah.
And you know what? I think there really are people. There are people that are just like that.
Yeah.
And when you're not like that, it's sort of like that. It's not the ignorance is bliss thing, but when you're not like that, you just can't even understand how
why you're going that way.
Yeah, yeah. You can't fathom how someone else could be thinking that way. So it almost becomes like an argument that can't be won because
that's part of the problem. That's the thing. Well, and the fact that the people with those brains have such a strong foothold
right.
in the political system that they can shut the government down because they don't like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
So adolescent.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's like measuring cocks or something. It's like, no, my penis is bigger. Watch.
But
I shut it down.
I think the irony is probably they've got a lot of inadequacy.
Well, yeah, sure.
They
Yeah, maybe.
They exercise their blue vein mentality.
I guess.
Maybe we should totally shift topics.
Uh-huh.
So we don't get too heavy. And like, why don't you tell me a little bit about your cats?
My cats.
Yeah.
I got two cats.
It's a major segue.
Yeah. No, this is more important. I have two cats.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tuxedo cat named Little K, and one of those orange cats. I don't know what they're
Calico?
Called.
No,
tabbies.
Tabbies.
Calico. I don't know. I don't know what the hell they're called. He's an orange cat.
A ginger cat.
His name is Burrows. And Little K, we used to have another tuxedo cat named Emerald. She was very sweet. Fat, sickly cat that she was just living in an alleyway next to our apartment building, and we started feeding her and coaxing her into the building where cats weren't allowed. Well, the cats were allowed in other apartments, but not in ours for some reason. I think my landlords may have been prejudiced on some level because they kept like descending rules, but we had plants on our balcony. Because when we moved in because the whole place was surrounded by trees. So it was kind of like this secluded getaway, this apartment in the valley. And within 2 months of us moving in, they cut down all the trees, which took away the shade. You know, it made the building naturally hotter and all that. And I'm not sure what their logic was there. But then we got a bunch of plants and put them on the balcony trying to recreate the feeling. And then they made us get rid of those. And then we fell in love with this alley, this fat alley cat. And brought her in, and they were like, you can't have her. And we're like, oh, fuck off, we'll just leave. So then we moved over the hill to Palms because of the stupid cat. And we were living there, and I was on a job in Canada. And my wife called one night and was like, hey, I found a kitten, and that was little Kay. And she said, and I brought her home. I hope that's okay. And I'm like, well, I guess, yeah. So I guess, I mean, what am I going to say? Get rid of it?
Right.
You know, two cats is okay. More than that, it's crazy cat lady territory, and I don't want to go there, but two cats is all right. But little Kay is not the other tuxedo cat. Emerald was sweet, gentle. Kay's she's a bitch. She's a real bitch. She doesn't get along. She came before my son. She's like 9 years old and he's 8.
Right.
And she has never liked him. No. And I think there's like a dynamic
right.
with cats, she's with like kids. Older, she's like, what yeah. What the hell is this? Why right. is it getting... And so she doesn't get along. So that sort of burrows, because after living in Palms for a number of years, we finally moved over here to North Hills, California, in a house. And there's a lot of alley cats here. And they we have a lavender bush right outside our mm-hmm. door. And the... neighborhood cat, there's a cat that actually lives across the street in the house, and they refuse to get him fixed, and he runs around porking all the
right
the unfixed alley ladies, and they dump their litters of kittens in our wow. front yard because it's filled with all these native bushes that create really good shelters for tiny tiny kittens. So the first time that happened, and it's happened multiple times, but the first time it happened, my wife was watering the lavender bush and it started screaming at her. And she's like, what? And Burroughs sort of stumbled out soaking wet, like meowing, like, what right. the hell? And she came in with him, you know, covered in fleas. And I was like, oh, no. What is why? What is that? And she's like, he was out in the lavender bush. I was like, was he alone?
Right.
And she goes, as far as I know. And I was like, if you find a kitten that small, it's most likely there's a few more, which there was. And at that time, you know, we got... found a home for the other two, and we kept him
right.
mostly for Colby because, you know, Colby was having issues with the bitchy cat.
Colby, your son.
My son right. was having, issues with the bitchy cat. So, you know, Burroughs is much friendlier to him.
But it sounds like then these cats have, like, really framed a certain movement and decisions with your life.
Sure, yeah.
And then the move, you had one move because of the cat.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
You know, and then a move out, cause, and then a move back.
Yeah.
Come on, and then you know, even brokering the relationships within your family.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a lot of power.
The cats do have, cats have a lot of power.
They do.
It's true. But since Burroughs, like every time, because we, like every few months, we find another litter of kittens in one of our bushes. I just take them to animal control.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I mean, the one that we go to is actually, they're really good about finding homes for them. It's just, you know, there was one the last time who was like really runty and sick. And they're like, I don't know about this guy. And I was like, I don't know either, but I'm going out of town, so I can't take care of him.
Right.
So, you know, this is the best I can do. Which is, you know, it's on me to take them to animal control because my wife can't
right.
do it.
You would have,
but
many
she's
cats.
Allergic to cats.
Oh,
I mean, she takes shots
oh, wow.
and pills and crap. And Colby, my son, is also allergic to cats, but he has a tolerance to these ones because he lives with them as she does. But you bring in a litter of kittens in a cage,
yeah.
which you have to keep separate from
yeah,
the
right.
adult cats because you can't get them
yeah.
Cleaned up and vaccinated and tested for feline HIV and all that crap until they're a certain age. So you have to keep them separate from the big cats, and they don't like it. They don't like strange kittens, you know, and little Kay starts barfing all over the place. She gets anxious when the kittens are around and barfs. So that's another reason. And then I got my family is all snotty. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I can't do this.
You know, I discovered, because I've had cat allergies at times, and you know what I read is that it's actually, I always thought it was their fur.
It's a dander.
But it's actually their saliva.
Oh, their saliva, right. Yes,
so,
yes.
It's saliva licking their fur and then the dander that comes off of that. But apparently it's not, you know, you could have a cat allergy, but it's not all cats. It just depends on that particular cat's saliva.
Yeah, well, that's true. I had a friend who got a really bad infection because she had kittens in her backyard and was collecting them, and one of them bit her.
Right.
And she got a really bad infection. And she's not allergic to cats.
Huh.
So, yeah, they can be dangerous, these goddamn cats.
I know. You know, you're talking about litters. When I was in college, I had a whole menagerie. I had a boa constrictor that a friend of mine in a dorm could not keep, named Cleo, and so I took this boa constrictor into my home because I had sort of like a fear of snakes. I thought, oh well, this will be interesting, and I tore out the china cabinet in the dining room that has, you know, it was one of those houses in Boston, you know, in Alston, Brighton, and had one of those china cabinets built in.
Mm-hmm.
And I removed the glass panes and put in chicken wire and put like someone gave me like a fake antlers thing, and I stuck that in there. And I built this like kind of terrarium. Uh-huh. You know, when you had to use hot rocks that plugged in because
they're reptiles.
Yeah. And then I also had an iguana. So the snake was named Cleo and the iguana was named Gonzo. And then I had four cats and two Netherland dwarf rabbits.
What are Netherland dwarf rabbits?
They're
these rabbits?
Smaller ones. They're not the big floppy ones. They're a little smaller.
They're
called Netherland dwarfs.
Uh-huh.
But I had no idea that the gestation period for rabbits, you know, the whole, like, fuck like bunnies thing.
And
you know, it's really more like gestate like bunnies because they're apparently the gestation period is 29 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they're most fertile the day they give birth or the next day or two after. So I didn't know this until, you know, the rabbits, Sloopy and Drosty, they did their thing. And then these
babies.
Litter. I guess it's called a litter with rabbits.
I guess.
Six rabbits were born. And then what you see happen is a little before they're born, the female rabbit starts tearing all of her hair out of her chest because that's the nest they make. From her fur, right?
Yeah.
So her hair, she's all raw, and it starts to grow back before she gives birth. But you realize, oh, she's pregnant because she's making a nest. So Sloopy, she's give birth to these six. But then about 4 or 5 days later, 6 days later, I see her start tearing her hair out again,
and you're like,
what the hell?
How long is their pregnancy? Just like a week?
29-day gestation period. Yeah, their pregnancy, boom, and the whole thing, and they give birth 29 days later. So the second round, she gave birth to four, and then I noticed her, like, a few days later pulling her hair out again, and I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on?
And that's when I
did a little research. This is pre, you know, Wikipedia, pre-Google, pre-internet. So I go to the pet store, and I find, and they explain to me, oh, yeah, gestation period 29 days, and they're the most fertile the day they give birth, the day after. So you have to, like, separate the male and the female before the birth happens, or else, I didn't know it then. It was already too late. And then 29 days later, she's like
doing it
again, laying on her side, pulling her hair out of herself again, gave birth to two. But I knew to separate at that point.
Right, right.
But I'm only bringing all this up because all this whole menagerie with all the...
But you had a boa.
Yeah.
So free food.
Yes. Well you know, the cat used to jump up onto the ledge. One of the cats used to jump up on the ledge of the china cabinet to look at...
The snake
and the iguana, and I would sometimes open up. You know, I would feed, you know, hooded rats to the snake. But I would take the snake out sometimes. I had a water bed, and the snake was 7 feet when I first got it, but it grew to like 11 feet.
Holy shit!
And it would stretch out along the edge of the water bed because it was warm. But they're really cool boa constrictors. They're not like...
I know. My sister had one. I don't like snakes.
Yeah. Well,
Indiana Jones.
I think about it now, and I'm like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
But one time, the cat jumped up on the ledge, but the gate was open because I was getting... And it got really hairy. Like, I had the boa in my hand. The cats were all coming, and the iguana was flickering along the floor, and one of the cats was going after the iguana, and it's like... I had to like sit them all down and have like a group therapy session.
Yeah, so you were like Ace Ventura pet detective.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
My sister had a couple of big snakes. She had a boa and a python.
Yeah.
But when she had a baby, she was like, yeah, I got to get rid of these. Because they were like 10 feet tall.
Did you hear that story? It was in Canada, I think. I think it was Canada. It was recently, in the past couple months, these two kids were sleeping over at some friend's house, and they lived below, the friend lived below, either above a pet store.
Mm-hmm.
And these two, I think they were pythons, broke out of the pet store and went up through the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were sleeping in the living room, and the snake killed the kids.
Oh my God!
Like a 4- and a 6-year-old.
Jesus!
They were like,
"Fuck!"
It was.
That's
just
horrible.
It was horrible.
Reptiles are good pets.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't domesticate those things.
All the snake was doing was just, you know.
It's doing what a snake does.
Yeah.
That's what a snake does.
They're not even attack-like. It's just the fact that once they constrictor, when they wrap around and, you know.
Every
time, you know, inhale happens, they squeeze tighter.
My sister got rid of her snakes right away as soon as she was pregnant. She had that very thought, which I think is smart. I had a friend in college. His name was Pete, and he kept a boa in his dorm room, but he'd let it out, and it was, you know, one of those old buildings in New York with the radiators on, you know, those standing radiators.
Yep.
So it would wrap itself. I didn't even realize I was sitting right next to this radiator at one point at one of, you know, these progressive dorm parties,
right,
having a drink, and I looked at the radiator. I was like, it's a weird looking. What's with the pattern on the, and he's like, oh, that's my snake. I mean, it was wrapped around the whole thing. It was like the whole thing. I was like, oh shit, dude. Shit.
Right.
I'm sitting right next to it. He's like, he's not gonna hurt you. I was like, what? You don't know that for sure. And then his roommate was playing with the goddamn thing, and it got away.
Yeah,
like he let it out to do its thing, and it disappeared. Last time it was seen, because they were on like the fifth floor of this building, it was in the basement laundry room.
Right.
Some chick was doing her laundry, and a goddamn boa constrictor came out of the ceiling.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I moved out of that place, and I had to move in another place, and so I actually had to keep the snake in a terrarium, like one of those super long ones.
Uh huh.
You know? And I came home once, and the lid was out, and I didn't know where he was at all. And I went into the kitchen, and it turned out I opened the door of the stove, and he was up inside the oven, all, you know, to find warmth.
Right, right.
Because it was Boston.
Right.
And I remember I had to like pull him out of that stove, like, and there, and every time you pull, it's pure muscle, their entire body, which is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah. No, they're cool.
But
I mean, just not pets.
I
don't like snakes. Creep me out. Snakes and spiders, I don't do well with. I'm a combination of Indiana Jones and Jeff Daniels' character in Arachnophobia. I don't like those things. Spiders are worse, though. I think spiders are worse for me.
So you're from New England, right?
Sure.
You're from Boston. You're from. So are you happy about the Red Sox?
I don't give a crap.
You don't give a crap, yeah.
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 My family's all very excited, right. I'm sure. I don't...
You're not even a fair weather fan, as they call
I'm
it.
Not, like, I'm not any kind of... I mean, people take this the wrong way. I don't hate sports.
Right.
I'm fine with sports.
I'm with you.
I'll play sports.
Yeah.
You know, I'll mess around. I'll shoot bad. I used to love playing basketball and stuff. I don't do it much anymore just because I don't have the time.
Right.
Or I do have the time. I just choose to watch TV instead.
Right.
Even as a kid, I just didn't, you know, my dad would watch everything, you know, Sundays were, you know, especially in the, you know, fall and winter, we're, you know, set up a fire, put whatever the games were on the TV and read the Sunday paper. And, you know, I liked reading the paper and sitting by the fire, but I never got into the games. You know, my brother got into the games. My sister followed it more than I did. I mean, my family is, you know,
I'm the same way. I mean, I sometimes I like watching baseball for the theater of it. you know, there's theater in it almost.
Yeah, you know? I'm not above going to a game. I mean, I've been to games. I went to a Kings game a few years ago. I mean, if I'm going to go to a game and I have a choice between sports, I'm probably going to go see a hockey game.
Right.
Because I just think hockey's
it's a little more active.
More active and exciting.
Yeah.
And there's less, and there's more fighting. Like, my friend growing up had season tickets to the Bruins at the old Boston Garden, which was full of rats and shit. And that place was insane. I mean, the fights
I remember that
would break out in the stands, never mind in the ice.
Right.
I mean, it was constant. I mean, just drunk people fighting. And, you know, I would just go. It was like gladiator time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, this is awesome. And not really as a teenager realizing I'm in actual terrible danger.
Right,
this is a dangerous place to be. But it was certainly exciting. And my dad was a huge, you know, Celtics fan. So I grew up on that. I mean, I followed, you know, the Larry Bird years.
Right.
You know, when it was all about Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson. I was very aware of what
was... Or Walt Frazier.
Yeah, I was very aware of what was going on with them. But, you
know... Their shorts were very short.
Very short.
I mean, you look at those old videos and it's funny compared to what... The whole baggy pant thing now, it's just...
Yeah, was a different time. It was the 80s. I mean, I still... One of my comfort foods, as it were, is Magnum P.I. Like, I still love watching old Magnum P.I. episodes. His goddamn pants, man, and his shorts, something else. Because, I mean, they would be ball-hugging... Pulled up, ball hugging tight, and then like cinched with a belt at the mid of his stomach.
Right,
it's ridiculous looking, but he was such a handsome dude; he could pull it off.
That's I know all that whole kind of look back then.
It was fun. Yeah, it was something special. In a certain way, I kind of miss it. But you know, we got new short shorts now on all the. Tweeners, so we're rectifying that situation, I guess.
Yeah.
I find that upsetting quite a bit, but I have this weird thing because, you know, I'm a very sex positive dude. I was brought up Catholic.
Right.
So, you know, I have my weird things about it. I think that's just something you hassle with your whole life when your parents make that terrible mistake. But I'm a very sex positive guy, but like when I see a 12-year-old girl like dressed that way, I get like my friend was saying to me not too long ago. He was sitting in the car, you know, and he was just looking out the window, and he caught these two chicks, you know, from the back who were wearing these like super slutty shorts and, you know, midriff shirts and all that stuff. And he was like, "Yeah."
And
that is nice.
Around.
And then when he saw their faces, he was like, "Oh, god damn it. Now I'm a child molester. I'm a creep. I am a creep." But those outfits, I mean, it's like, I don't understand that. Like,
well, to me, it goes back to the parenting on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but why is that so accepted now? I mean, it's so...
I don't know.
Their parents... Like, so many parents, I guess, when we grew up, were overly strict about that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with telling your 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl... I mean, once they get to 16...
Yeah.
You got to tell them the facts of life, like the brutal facts of life, the realities of it. And all that, and then they can choose how they want to dress. I mean, I don't think you necessarily have to dress
now,
like a...
the way the culture is. It's just, I mean, it's just in their face. I mean, if you live in any big city and you're
inundated
big billboards,
and
just like you're seeing all this stuff so much that it's hard to differentiate. It's just hard to differentiate.
Yeah, but
word appropriate means.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I'm a parent also, and I feel, you know.
Well, I don't have a girl. I have a boy.
Right, and I thank God
every day that I don't have a girl because I don't know what I would
but
do.
But we can also, I guess I feel like we can help the situation on some level by modeling for our boys and communicating with them, you know, the flip, the reverse side of exactly what we're talking about. So they have a sort of sensitivity and awareness of, you know, maybe not willingly objectifying.
Right,
you know,
right.
Girls,
well,
they know.
Or, you know, and there is, I mean, I think we also kind of go too far with that concept of sexual objectification being an entirely bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think we all sexually objectify each other on some level. It's just, I mean, I think, you know, when you're saying you're inundated with these images, I mean, in so many ways, they're pornographic. I mean, the definition of pornography being something that exists without artistic, quote unquote, artistic merit that is designed to elicit, you know, a sexual response. Although I don't even know if that's like the government. I think it's just a response, you know. So by that definition, by the government's definition, Michael Bay movies are pornography.
Right.
But there's a lot of pornographic images in Michael Bay's movies. Like when you have Megan Fox bending over a motorcycle.
Right.
In
exactly.
I mean, what else is that supposed to elicit?
Right.
Except boners from the dads who took their 11-year-old boys to
exactly.
see the robots.
Richard Pryor used to do a bit on this about sort of like what you said when your friend said, you know, they turned around. He's like, oh, Richard Pryor said his daughter would bring friends over and that whole thing would start to come up. And then, you know, they'd go, Mr. Pryor, and they'd start, and he'd go, thank God they started talking.
Yes.
that was like the saving grace.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I luckily have always sort of been more attracted to older women anyway, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, I can tell that a friend of mine, teaches, does music lessons and all that stuff. And he said the same things, like these 16-year-old girls, you know, dressed provocatively coming to a singing lesson, and he's like, whoa. And then as soon as they talk, he's like, I can't even believe that blipped across my
but
head.
I mean, yeah, but he's also human, and that's where the quagmire comes into play, because you know
right, it becomes harder. I mean, the older I get too, I think for me it becomes harder and harder not to be a creepy old dude. And I don't even mean with like teenagers, I mean with like 20 somethings. If I see them walking across the street, I'm like, wow, she's and then I'm like, geez, I'm like twice her age.
Yeah, but you
I'm
know,
a creepy old guy, but she's dressed like that, and I'm not an aggressor.
You creepy, yeah, you're only a creepy old guy if you start following her around.
yeah,
and like telling her you're 28.
right,
you know what I mean?
Right,
I mean. I think this kind of stuff is just what we will always wrestle with.
Yeah. And that's the other thing right now that I'm always considering is like, because, you know, pornography is everywhere, right? Pornographic images on billboards and TV, everywhere you look, there's like these different versions of pornography. But then there's real pornography, you know, actual hardcore pornography. That it's going to be impossible to keep him from.
Oh, yeah.
Once the curiosity is there, he's going to be able to access it. If I have locks all over my computers, which I will because I don't want to find him watching porn, he's going to find it somewhere else.
Well, you also will have to take note. I mean, because my son's 14, and you know, so he's obviously right. I've noticed just he individually happens to be not that typical kind of kid. Like I see some of his friends, I'm sure he's explosive, but he doesn't. We'll go to our movies together, we'll watch certain things with each other. I don't mean we're watching you porn.
right
you know, but we actually did go see, it was interesting, we went to see recently because it was some kind of screening. We saw that Don John film.
Oh yeah.
Without
how was that?
Without quite knowing to the level of what was in
it. It's going
to
be kind of...
And my wife went also.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that's uncomfortable family viewing.
It was... Well, what happened was I was sitting in the middle, which was really good. But, I mean, literally, in that film, they show... He's edited it in a way where he'll cut to he's watching you porn.
Right.
And they show the clips in a way that they don't quite reveal too much, but way more than it felt appropriate for to be there with my son and my wife.
Right.
But the reason why I'm bringing it up is my son actually said, he actually turned to me and said, hey, Dad, you tell Mom that I'm actually looking away when that stuff comes up. He actually said, it's okay. And I I'm not, and he really was. He was like, I'm not going to look.
Well, it's uncomfortable with your parents. I mean, I don't know if he's more just averse to pornography, which, I wouldn't be 100% surprised if Colby was ultimately that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I only bring that up because but whereas he's got a couple of friends where I watch, they were at a school dance like in seventh grade and, you're not even at the dance, but you show up near the end and you see some of the kids dancing. And I knew one kid was dancing with this other girl and I just knew, oh, this kid's hard. And he's got an erection right now and he's, but my son was like kind of,
doing
at arm's length, dancing. It was just, but that other kid is probably all over you porn and maybe even be latchkey and maybe even already smoking pot.
Right.
And so there is the whole gamut. It's not, what I'm trying to say is it's not necessarily going to mean that, like, you might not need the locks. Like,
Right.
You might need the locks because he has a group of friends.
Well, I feel like, because I
can't control it. It's true. There's so much around now.
I got, I got busted a couple times as a kid with, like, porno magazines and stuff. It would be found. Right. My stash was found. Found footage was, the mother would stumble across it in routine cleanings. So I would get in trouble. And, I got sort of a perfunctory talk about, that's not really how sex is. But it was never – I didn't get enough detail from the talks, I got the, cleaver, version of, the birds and the bees. It was very brief. So most of my sexual education, other than, the day they spent in school talking about it was pornography. I mean, the logistics, the physical logistics of it, even though porn doesn't really present the actual physical logistics because it's done for a camera.
Right.
So bodies are contorted and weird so you can see the good stuff. That was my, education. And I don't think there's any way you can argue that, pornography does not distort your sexual relations with other people. Some people say, it's like I get in arguments with people about Hollywood movies all the time and saying, I think the consistent and excessive, violence of PG-13 movies, it does have an effect on the way that you relate to other people. And actually, with little kids,
it's a desensitization.
With little kids, there have been studies that, being exposed to excessive violence. This is more R-rated movies, really, than PG-13 movies. But being, when the parents are watching, Jason movies, which my wife and I love Jason movies. This is what I'm saying. I mean, I love that crap, but I didn't get – it was kept from me.
Right.
And I had to sneak off and see it. And it was
also
forbidden.
A time and a place. Yeah.
But I also was smart enough to process it as trash. It's like, I'm watching this trash and I'm enjoying this trash and I'm laughing at this trash.
It's like guilty pleasure.
But I don't even feel guilty about it because it's just know it's pretend and I know the creativity that goes into it, even though it seems just disgusting.
Right.
But I get it. But, a little kid doesn't have that
thing.
And it makes, one of the studies that I read about it was it screws up their learning curve with mathematics. It makes it harder for them to understand and process math.
Hmm.
Which I found really interesting. So there's something – because defensive walls go up in your brain when you're exposed to that stuff too much that, keep the kid from learning math. I just found that really interesting.
I remember –
but porn – because whenever I get in arguments with people about this stuff, sensors and all that.
If you're at a certain age rate and you've already had relations and you've had intimacy and you've had experience, then you're – but if you're getting exposed – if the first way you're seeing anything is that, you're looking at a distorted reality before, like, you've been involved in any of the pureness of it.
And I think that
that can be a problem.
I mean, it was probably a perfect storm in my case, in that I was a small town.
Right.
You know, it was wealthy, so there was a lot of snobbery going on, and my family was, you know, middle class.
There were probably key-swapping parties back then that you didn't know about.
Well, my parents weren't at them.
No, but I'm just saying.
I'd like to go. But because I wasn't, you know, sexually active, most of my sexual outlet became you know, pornography.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was, you know, my early sex life. So it became – I mean, I think I went through a lot of crap in college where – I mean, it was just – I didn't watch that much porn in college because I didn't like watching porn with dudes.
Right.
Or, you know, it was just constant roommates. Like, when do you watch –
Right.
When do you watch porn?
Well, we also, I know for me, like, the stuff that's around now, we didn't have any kind of access to any of that
stuff. Well, yeah, you had to, that was the other thing. I mean, if I wanted to watch porn in college, I had to go to a store and rent it.
Yeah.
And you have to go in the back room.
It is just amazing now.
Yeah, you don't, it's totally anonymous. Except for the, you know,
and it's also free.
Viruses.
I mean,
yeah, sure, yeah. In a manner of speaking,
you know,
yeah, it gums up your computer with spyware and crap.
Right.
So, but yeah, it doesn't cost money.
Well, you know, the one thing you were saying about the kids watching stuff or math, you know, that I bet it made me think. Also, there were kids who I was happy that my son was only two when 9/11 happened because the kids who were about five or six. There, you know, because so my son didn't know anything. Obviously, he didn't know anything was going on.
Right.
But a 5-year-old or 6-year-old who was around their parents who were so in shock and were watching it. Those kids, there was all the stuff that came out. The kids thought like hundreds of planes hit the World Trade Center.
Oh, because it was over.
It's because
they
kept seeing it over and over and over and over again.
Right, right.
And that shows you how, in terms of the way brain development is, if you're exposed to certain things that you can't even process because your brain's not more developed yet, you can see how it's going to have some kind of crazy effect on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean,
I get in arguments too, with our, you know, people who are in the entertainment industry who are friends of mine, you know, talking about the MPAA, which, you know, if I was a powerful Hollywood person, that's the first thing I would just try to take down. Because the MPAA is – because there, you know, the concern is if the government steps in and starts creating these guidelines about movies, then it'll become censorship.
Right.
Even though the MPAA is, you know, constantly censoring
and it's movies. Also, it's also about money too because –
Well, Hollywood doesn't want to lose control of that.
Right.
But the problem is the MPAA rating system at this point is so cockeyed and makes no sense.
Right.
It's and that, you know, and this is another thing. I've heard this argument, especially from libertarians, saying, well, it's not Hollywood's responsibility to raise your kids. It's your responsibility to raise your kids.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's true. But then why have the MPAA at all?
Right. I agree.
Like, either have a good guideline system that makes sense. And, you know, and there's the classic, you know, argument that sex gets you an X and violence gets you an R sort of thing.
Right.
And that I agree with. But, I mean, also just the muddied waters with PG-13 and NC-17 now, it's just like – you don't know what you're getting into. It's like you have to go see the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like if we're doing any kind of live action movie, because we've taken,
you watch it first. And you also don't know what your kid might get affected by.
Well,
I remember our son back when he was really young was freaked out when one of the trains in Thomas the Tank Engine had the open mouth scare. That would flip him out. He would get totally frightened from that face. And we didn't understand why at all.
Well, you know, some kids like have massive anxiety about you know, about any sort of not animated, but like any,
you know,
like filmed thing, yeah, where it's you know, moving and weird on a,
right,
screen that can cause anxiety.
Yeah, so I mean, you really don't know. That's why in some ways you have to, like, you just have to, you know, you get the information off of your kid.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't really go to the guidelines. There are a bunch of great websites that they have spoiler alert in a sense, but you know,
right,
you go, if you go on IMDb, and
they, have
down,
parental,
they have a
parental.
They tell,
yeah,
you, well, there's this. There's,
yeah,
he shows his dick. And there,
well, my problem
guys,
with that is, you know, more there. That seems still more focused on sexuality,
yeah,
and bad language, which I don't care about as much as, you know, violence. But they are,
right,
pretty good. They do have a list.
I mean,
stuff.
I had a great experience with this. I took my son and a friend of his to see This Is the End.
Uh-huh.
Okay, did you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, and I thought it was really funny. I actually...
Maybe,
now, again, it might have been experiencing it with my son.
That changes a lot, because gone back and revisited movies that I took Colby to see, and I'll be like, I liked that?
Yeah.
Because that's not very good.
Well,
but it's like you're seeing
the
it
through
a child's
eyes. The reason why I brought
eyes,
it up,
yeah,
though, is there's some... Well, there's like drug, you know.
Oh, that's...
Drugs,
yeah, it's an R-rated movie.
But what was interesting is... I talked about it with my son. So at that point, it was just this past summer, right? So he's already 14, and he, you know, he completely got. So this has to do with his level of sophistication, just whatever word you use. He completely got that it's so over the top. So he just saw it as funny.
Yeah.
He didn't think like, oh, I'm going to go start smoking pot like crazy.
Right, right, now. Right.
Or he just thought in other words, he got the absurdity of it. And that was interesting to me because, you know, if at face value, I'd go, oh, my God, I can't believe, I can't believe he's watching this stuff. Am I being bad? You know, should I have,
right,
not taken him to this or whatever? And then I realized that it's like I didn't give him enough credit in a sense.
Yeah.
You
well,
know?
I
so
mean,
there is that.
I think that. You know, I'm not going to show my 8-year-old This Is the End. Of
right.
Course,
no. That, if I had shown it to him. If he had seen it at that age, that would have not
been
cool.
That would have, yeah.
But you start, that's the thing.
Well, for me, you know, with the PG-13 movies too, because we've gotten a little bit more bold about, you know, we'll look at the parental advisory on IMDb to get the specifics about the violence. But we've gotten a little bolder about taking those risks with them. But it's very specific in that, like we took him to the last Star Trek movie.
Right.
So we'll take him to that. But we're not going to take him to, I don't know, like a 2012 or something like that. Like a, I don't
well,
know.
2012 feels more real because it's like L.A. and it's
like
Star Trek is obviously already a fantasy.
Right.
So it's
right.
already more because, you know, then it goes into even kind of some of the books they're reading. I mean, my son was reading, you know, Hunger Game. You know, Hunger Games a few years ago, but that's like a bleak, that whole book.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, but they get really into that. They know it's another time. I mean, there's all this post-apocalyptic stuff now that it seems to be a whole area that they're just completely.
Yeah, with teenagers, yeah,
they have no issue with.
But though, like that, like
that
and,
was like
but that's the thing,
kids.
This is what I'm saying. That this is what I'm saying about the PG-13 rating. The Hunger Games is a PG-13
yeah,
franchise.
And look what it's about.
And
kids
it's
are being
it's,
hunted
it's,
by other kids.
It's Battle Royale. Did
yeah.
you ever see that movie?
Yeah, yeah.
It's that, just like slightly less violent, but like the thematic elements of that
right.
are entirely inappropriate for younger kids. But the PG-13 rating is so, you know, murky.
And it's also very mercenary. You want to get that for the very reason to...
Right, right.
You know, we're being thoughtful about this, but there's plenty of people out there who are parents who just wow, Grizz, some go.
Well, it's yeah, it's PG-13. It's it's essentially PG. My kids are right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that I mean, but that's what the NC-17 did to the R rating,
right?
Because the NC-17 is legally,
right.
if you're under 17,
right.
you cannot go to this movie,
right?
R is just if you're under 17,
you're
a grown-up has to be with you.
Right.
Like watching, Joe Pesci smash someone's head with like a clamp.
Right.
You know, it is going to be easier to take for an 8-year-old if he's with dad.
Oh, I know.
I mean, that's just a ludicrous concept.
Yeah,
now it's become like okay to go to R-rated movies as long as, because that's what it says. It says if they're with a parent, it's okay.
I mean, you know, this seems to me it goes all the way back to like just what it would mean if everyone was a little more thoughtful.
Yeah.
In terms of what their whole responsibility is. I mean, you know, we've got to get a driver's license, you know, but there's nothing for parenting.
Yeah, that's right. That's Keanu Reeves in Parenthood. His character's name? Todd.
Oh, really?
He says that in Parenthood. Oh. Yeah, you need a license to go fishing. You need a license to drive, but any old asshole can be a father.
And it's true. I mean, and that's why, you know, things are the way they are.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about today? Or
no,
covered a lot of territory.
I feel like we've covered a lot of important social issues, politics, cats. It sounds like your show has it all. I don't know how you can ask for a better guest than me.
Well, it's been really great having you.
Thanks for having me.
And if anyone needs to reach Todd,
you can go to info@toddrobertanderson.com and leave me a message. Or you can go to filmpigs.com and leave a message there.
Or Filmpigs have a rating?
Filmpigs is decidedly, we're a hard R outfit.
Okay.
Not for children.
All righty.
All right.
All right.
Thanks.
Signing out.